Hey friends, you're listening to Go Home Bob or You're Drunk, an irreverent media podcast.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed. So you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, this is Go Home Bible You're Drunk, the only Bible-based podcast that believes women are people. My name is Justin. I'm a former pastor, former evangelical, probably a former Christian. Today, I think I'm a former Christian, mostly because I've been reading a lot of things that Christian men are saying, and I want none of it. So today, I am officially not a Christian. So it may change tomorrow, but for today, I'm abstaining. I have a co-host as well.
Hi, yes, I'm Tori. I'm also former evangelical. And today I retweeted that the sexiest thing a man can do is put a millstone around his neck and walk into the sea. So I'm both anti-Christ and anti-man today. But again, it's just today.
Yeah, just for today.
Yeah. Anti-Christian, I guess. Yeah. Not anti-Christ.
Christ.
Gotta clarify.
And Christ was not a man, so it's fine.
Oh, also true. This is canon.
Yes. Yes, canon.
All right.
So
what are we talking about today?
Yeah, God.
What shit are the evangelicals up to this minute?
Yeah, so we dear listeners, I just gotta say, Tori and I have dove deep into the Christian manosphere, which is its own subculture of the manosphere. Which is somehow darker than the normal manosphere, I think,
yeah.
A little bit.
Uh-huh.
and we have come up for air, and we have thoughts. So there was a kerfuffle, not a kerfuffle, just a Twitter thing that happened, and it just happened in the broader conversation. There was a couple articles. I feel like there were a couple articles, back to back. Old friend of the pod, William Wolfe, got involved. Or is it William Wolfe? Is that his name?
I think that William E. Wolfe. I think so. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
He's blocked me on Twitter, so I don't know what he's up to. He's the one that did the case for Christian nationalism. He's got it going. But basically, there was a couple of screeds and Twitter threads in the Christian manosphere, basically talking about the evils of feminism and the evils of empathy, and which honestly anymore is just code for the evils of women existing. And we read some articles and we have thoughts. What the main article that we read was the article by, what's his name?
Joseph Rigney.
Joseph Rigney.
Master Joseph Rigney.
Yes, Esquire, called Empathy, Feminism, and the Church. It's an American Reformer. I don't think there's ads on this particular article, so you feel free to read it yourself if you wish. Actually, don't, because Tori and I both, we read this article and I read a couple other things, read a couple takes on it. And honestly, I think the word that we used to describe it the most was boring. It's just like, how many ways can you say you don't think women are people? I don't know. It's frustrating and weird. And so, but I want to talk about it because I think we're going to probably take the whole episode to talk about this just because it's an interesting phenomena, like the Christianization of misogyny And there's plenty of misogyny in the Bible, to be fair. But there's also women that are apostles in the Bible, too. And there are women who are generals, and there is a certain amount of gender bendiness in the Bible, like most ancient manuscripts, you know, ancient myths. So it's not like it's not there, but it's just casually ignored by folks that just would, by men who would just like to think that being a man is the best thing ever, and that everyone should just be so excited that they're men. So I have a lot of thoughts, but I would like Tori to start us off, and then we'll go from there.
Okay, yeah, so this article by American Reformer, which that title is very strange. Like, it's a little bit too meta for them to even get it, but whatever. In this article, Joe talks about how women should not be ordained because they are evil temptresses. And then he goes on to cite a bunch of random shit, like studies that don't have names or dates or authors.
Or existence.
As to the extent of our knowledge, we don't know. Mm-hmm. And, it starts off really interesting, right? Because he doesn't actually define empathy as he's using it in this particular article. And so that was kind of my first thought, honestly, was like, maybe we should talk about really quickly when we are saying empathy and when we are saying feminism, like what the fuck we are talking about. Because there has been like this sort of intentional, and like this is a really powerful thing to do, like politically. So I'm not saying that this is like a tool that shouldn't be used, but there is a very manipulating language is like a very powerful tool, right? And it, especially for like oppressors, like this is documented history. So that was sort of where I wanted to start off, because he jumps in here and says, a number of years ago, I kicked up the hornet's nest by highlighting how empathy, as understood and practiced in the modern world, is dangerous, destructive, and sinful. And I was like, okay, but again, like, what do you mean by this, right? So he is saying that his definition of empathy, right, is, well, should I read the whole thing? Because his definition of empathy is weird.
He does try to define empathy, like, it's like halfway through the article or something, but it's not.
Well, there's a super short definition in the second paragraph.
Go ahead.
So this is, and we can come back to something in here because y'all are going to catch it immediately. He says, my basic contention is that running beneath the ideological conflicts surrounding all things, in quotes, woke, parentheses, race, sexuality, abuse, and LGBTQ+, is a common emotional dynamic involving untethered empathy, that is, a concern for the hurting and vulnerable that is unmoored from truth, goodness, and reality. So that's like his mini definition in this piece, at least.
Yeah.
And I left a comment on his little blog, and I was like, could you just quickly explain to me, because you're saying that woke and race and sexuality and abuse are all equally sinful? So like, what does this mean? Does this mean that like if someone is black, that's the same as being like someone who kicks dogs? Like,
yeah.
Give me some answers here.
Yeah.
I'm sure he won't, because I'm not white. But this comes back to something that like I talk about on this show all the goddamn time, where he says that empathy is concern that's unmoored from truth, goodness, and reality, right? Mm-hmm. And the lens that he is using is that he gets to dictate reality to human people, women and children, people he can kick without getting in trouble, right?
Yeah.
That's his version of reality. And I think it's really fascinating, right? Because he kind of does this thing where he's like, God made you feel empathy. Like it's a good thing, kind of, but also like he sends you to hell for feeling it.
Yeah. Like later on, he does kind of define empathy a little bit. Like, you know, he's like, you know, empathy, that is vicariously experiencing the emotions of another, can be a wonderful thing in its place. And of course, like he gets to because he's a man and he's tethered to reality in a way that I guess women aren't, gets to define what that context is. So it's
correct.
Like,
yes. You know,
empathy is great, but not anywhere important.
Not where it's needed.
Not where it's actually needed.
You're empathizing with me, my suffering as a white man.
Yeah. Like, oh, of course. Like, you, the oppressed person, can vicariously experience my struggles, I'm sure.
We literally have to. Like, it's all historical literature that you're required to read in this country. Mm-hmm. We have to identify with white men. Yes. Okay. That's good. But that totally ties into like what I'm thinking here, right? Because like I said, say this all the time, but being able to dictate other people's reality to them mm-hmm. is really interesting. And again, it's like a really powerful tool to like manipulate people when you get to tell them, hey, you weren't actually offended by that. Right. Mm-hmm. Or you were offended and you were supposed to be offended, or like you don't feel that way. Right. I decide you don't feel that way. I decide you don't feel hurt by what was said or what was
your
done.
Feeling. It wasn't valid. Like
your
experience.
I get to decide that your emotional experience isn't valid. And what was really interesting, because I read this article this morning, I was trying to get my work done and I like printed out the first page and I was just like, I'm gonna light someone's hair on fire. And so I just read the whole thing in one sitting. Started out very angry and got bored very fast.
That's the thing. It's like it reads like, oh, this is this screed, like I'm gonna like, oh, and it starts as women's ordination being a problem, you know, like, but it's like
it's the main sin that C.S. Lewis talks about.
Oh yeah, you know, because C.S. Lewis famously relevant, you know, and it's like, mm-hmm. and it's also C.S. Lewis. I mean, I didn't track this particular type of thought, but like C.S. Lewis, even like we'll go to like heavyweights like Augustine and even like Thomas Aquinas, like their theology changed over time, like. And some
as
of them
does if you're a person.
If you're a person, you know, like Martin Luther famously got worse as he got older. But like some people get better. And so like when were these things you're quoting written? Like would C.S. Lewis, if by some weird, you know, necromancy be resurrected today? Like would they agree with this statement even? Like that's always an interesting thing to play with. Like, oh, this is like my writings when I was like 19, let's just say I become famous sometime. You could probably find some pretty shitty things that I said like at a different point in my life. But anyway, that's just
this is a great point. Actually, I found a really old furry Ben Shapiro article, like real old blog post. And I was like, oh, I actually agree with most of what you're saying here.
Yeah.
You know, so people change. So what was really interesting for me when I was, so I read this article this morning and then later in the afternoon, I hopped online and I got a post from Allie Henney and she was talking about how she had this really difficult birth experience with her first child. And then an older man at her church who had like many kids, many grandkids, was just like an elder in the church, came up to her like the first day she was back with her baby and was like, hey, how are you doing? Like, how'd it go? Like, what's going on? And she explains, you know, kind of briefly, but like summarizes, like, I was in a lot of pain. It was a very traumatic experience. It did not go the way that I wanted. I'm still trying to recover, like physically, mm-hmm. obviously, and emotionally. And he kind of does this thing where he's like, no one's ever had a birth that has been as hard as yours. Like, no one ever has had, and no one ever will have a birth that is as hard as yours, and just like kind of walks away. But that's where this goes, right? Like, I get to dictate your reality to you. The example that I was thinking of where this becomes weaponized is in medicine. Before I read Allie's piece, I was thinking about how like male doctors are like, you don't have cramps, right? Mm-hmm. You're not experiencing pain. And having to like deal with that when I don't think there's much of a delineation, right, between like your emotional experience and your physical body. Like, you can't have an emotional experience outside of your body, right? So if I get to dictate your emotional experience to you, I also get to dictate to you when you're in pain.
Yeah.
Right. And that doesn't work. You know, if we're talking about like harm reduction, like that doesn't work. People die when we tell people how they are physically feeling. This is, mm-hmm. again, documented. It's in the data. Facts don't care about your feelings, Joe. So, yeah, that was really interesting to me. But then he kind of immediately goes on to saying, like, correcting racism is a worse sin than racism, because obviously. And, like,
because it makes me feel bad. And how dare you make me feel bad? Like,
right. Like, I'm right. I'm right. I'm doing the right thing. He quotes somebody else that he doesn't name saying empathy is a power tool in the hands of the sensitive.
Yeah, I remember reading that. And
that was
like,
interesting.
I mean, first off, that actually sounds kind of badass. Yeah, it should be a power tool for people that are like that. Yes. Like, yes, people that are more sensitive and more tuned into others' emotions, like, should have some kind of lever to pull to be like, hey, y'all, like, you need to fucking listen. Like, that's actually not like. But yeah, of course, he's using it pejoratively, like,
right,
you know, and again, using the term sensitive, like people that are sensitive are somehow to be feared and somehow to not be listened to. And like, why? Because they get in your way, because they make life hard, because they make you feel a sad and you don't know how to process that because you've been conditioned not to. Like, that sounds like a you problem, Joe.
Well, and it's really interesting because, it infers, I can infer from this. And it feels like he's implying that, like, power tools are only to be used by people who are not sensitive. Right? You're not sensitive. People are not supposed to have empathetic. People are not supposed to have power tools. Those are for me and my kind, you know?
Yeah.
Which, again, it's just like when he's talking about this empathy being concerned for the hurting and vulnerable that's unmoored from truth, goodness, and reality, there can't be any truth in telling people what their reality is and dictating to people what their reality is because you don't listen to them, right? So you're a liar. So again, like you don't get to define the words here. If you're gonna like just slap around random definitions, no, like we're not gonna let you do that. Like that's not okay. Yeah, it was off to a great, great start. And so I was kind of like fuming, but then he just gets really boring really quickly. It does make some, I have many thoughts though on other things.
Yeah.
That he
so
says.
He basically is like, I've been talking about this women's ordination being a problem and feminism being a problem for years. And then he kind of punts to this, like, I don't know, this controversy in Carolina thing he brings up. You know, basically there was a speech given by Friar Father Robinson, I don't care, like basically talking about critical theory as being antithetical to the gospel. Of course, I imagine this particular talk gave no good definition of critical theory, but just lumped everything possible, all the isms, liberalism, Marxism, feminism. They're all just queerism. I don't know, whatever. Like, it's all, you know, racism was not mentioned as something that was bad, but they're all, you know, basically like, right. and part of this, like this overall point was that feminism was the gateway drug into destroying the church. Destroying everything. And well, yeah, the gay, yeah, like this was the pill they slip into your drink and, you know, then just take your church away. I don't know. So like that's you know, a Trojan horse, a cancer, like he just very like, you know, visceral language to describe women's ordination. And for those that may know, like women's ordination, basically, can women be pastors? Like that's the question, the central question that just kicked off this whole thing. You know, and he tries to summon C.S. Lewis and, you know, whatever. So
he tries to summon. I love this.
You know, like
he went to a witch.
Like it is one of those things. It's like I'm trying to make a point. Can I find a way C.S. Lewis made this point? You know, that'll make it better. Yeah. Like so C.S. Lewis, this is just a funny quote. Like goddesses have, of course, been worshipped. Many religions have had priestesses, but they are religions quite different in character from Christianity. Like. And this is a bad thing. Like, I'm sorry. Like, we need religions that are quite different from Christianity.
No, we all need to be exactly the same. Justin, come on, get with it. This part kind of, like, honestly, this part kind of bugged me because he's talking, like, it was a nitpicky thing, but I was still just like, guys, come on, if you're going to, like, die on the hill of, like, Marxism, liberalism, and feminism, please don't say that, like, if you're talking about critical theory, like, please don't, like, anti-racism as praxis is way fucking older than Marx. Marx did not create anti-racism, bro. Yeah. So anyway, but they don't actually care about, you know, how or when things happened. then he goes into like this long, yeah, so he goes back to this long quote from this Father Robinson or whatever, where he says, generally speaking, men tend to be more theologically rigid, whereas women tend to be more theologically flexible. And I'm like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, please define these terms.
I'm like, you're universalizing theology in this weird gendered way that like just doesn't, I don't know. It was very, very strange. Robinson goes on, this is because men do not have the emotional intelligence of women. We are more black and white. I'm like, okay.
And again, you're stating this as a positive thing.
Well, okay. Right. So can we just like really quickly, like I just, for me, I'm like, I got to put on my neuroscience hat for just a second. Father, Friar, mm-hmm. Robinson, whoever the fuck you are. No, you're not. Okay. You cannot tell a male brain from a female brain by looking at a brain scan. You mm-hmm. can't do it. If you have put in like, I know this is a trope, right? But if you put in like your 10,000 hours of looking at fucking brain scans, you will get 3 out of every 10 correct if you are trying to gender them statistically. You can be an absolute expert and you cannot tell the difference between male and female brains in most people. So
I thought the dishwashing part of the brain was bigger in women.
Okay, so So what we're talking about here, we're talking about brain structures and brain connectivity. Yes, those develop differently, but again, that's impacted by culture, right? Mm-hmm. So even if you're looking at brain scans of like a white evangelical man, a white evangelical like Christian man in the US and like an Indian evangelical Christian man in India, like even that's not going to correlate, right? Because they're different fucking cultures, you know? And so there's different emphasis being put on different types of things within like the category of masculinity in different contexts. This isn't complicated. He's, you know, so he's talking about this like, it's just like men are from Mars, women are from Venus type bullshit. And I wrote in the notes, I was like, this is a conclusion in search of evidence. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, it's just like that. And that's like so much of I'm finding evangelicalism is and a lot of just Western being a manness is all vibes. Like it's all like, if I can state it confidently, maybe even cleverly, if I can use a little bit of a contrast, like men are more theologically rigid, women are more theologically flexible, like then, you know, people will just buy it. And that's, it's like this, there's no research cited. There's no like, and also like, what does theologically rigid and flexible even mean? Like they, you know, and he describes women, like women tend to be more inclusive. They're more empathetic. Like, and aside from the fact that I know women that are not inclusive and not empathetic, and I know, totally. And I know quite a few women that are very black and white in their thinking. So like, but you can see how he says, you can see how that might be a problem when a group is claiming to be an oppressed minority. I love how, again, the subtle, like, claiming to be an oppressed minority, that subtle like mm-hmm. you're not actually oppressed.
Anyway, we don't have laws against you or anything.
Yeah. They're claiming to be an oppressed minority, and the thing preventing them from attending church are the cruel doctrines and regressive scriptures we follow, which empath wouldn't want to compromise in order to make a so-called oppressed minority feel included. So he's basically saying, like, you know, women are more inclined to include people and be more like, and let doctrines, you know, slip. And so they can't be in leadership, I guess, you know?
I mean, can I just say, as like a non-white person who's like socialized female growing up in church, I don't think this is true. I grew up in white churches mostly. Women are not more inclusive.
No.
They're not.
No.
Sorry, that was just my experience. But since all we're doing is like throwing out anecdotes, figured I'd toss mine in too.
Yeah. I also should say, just sorry, we're gonna define this is an Anglican kind of thing. And so when I say evangelical, I might not always fit. Roughly half of Anglicans in the United States also identify as evangelical, but I just feel like, just to be more clear.
Ah, yes. Okay.
But conservative, certainly. And it kind of becomes its own self-eating ball of yarn after a while. So like, you know, and again, it's like, you know, women in general are more empathetic than men. And it's, that is a God's given blessing. And they, you know, and this is where he starts his whole like complementarian angle. Like, you know, empathy is great. Mm-hmm. It's what women are good at. It just means they're also disqualified from leadership.
Okay. Right. Tracking. Just like he quotes this person that I don't know, who quotes this research that is just called research, TM, I guess.
So the Abigail research, Dodds. The research is, the article links to an article written on desiringgod.org.
The research.
That's the research. Yes. Oh, this, I'm sorry. This I'm just going to go down the whole link ahead. Hole here. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Okay. All the way back.
So she also says God's gift to women, research shows. We're going to go to a newsroom.ucla.edu.
Okay.
And when others are in pain, women's brains show more empathy. It's the research conclusion, I guess. Okay. Which, again, like, I don't really want to read the whole thing. fMRI scans. So
what it's saying, I don't have to look at this to know what it's saying.
There's an abstract here. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. So, no, basically what you do is you put different people of different genders into MRI machines, and then you show them photos, right, of people experiencing pain. And I like some of the data shows like certain groups of people respond certain ways to seeing other people like them or unlike them, which I don't know if this particular study delineates. Experiencing pain and like what parts of your brain light up, and they kind of track like, okay, this is the part of the brain that typically lights up for most people when they are feeling empathetic, right? And so like, yeah, that's real. It's different for all kinds of people. It's like that same data also shows that white people don't feel empathy for Black people if they see Black people in pain. So like, no.
So we should also say equally that white people don't feel Black people's pain. Like that would easily go into this article.
This is a God-given feature. According to this article.
The God-given feature. And this is why white people should lead, because they feel less empathy than Black people. It's the same fucking logic. Like, that's what doesn't make
it any is. Sense. It's exactly the same logic. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So this is really very odd, right? Like this article that this apparently Desiring God article, is that what we're saying this is? She writes, a woman who is sensitive to the feelings of others, especially their pain, will be a sort of first responder. She's able to move toward the hurting. Most first responders are men. Also, is she able to move toward the hurting? And is ability the same as doing that thing? Like, this is a very white framework that he's using here. It's a very white, very evangelical, very 1957, if you will.
And it's one of those things, like, women are great at empathy because God made them that way, because fMRI scans prove it or whatever. But like,
you don't believe in fMRI scans
unless they give us the results that we want and we interpret it poorly. So but then he's like, well, what's a blessing in one place, women being more empathetic, is a curse in another. Like, you know.
Like penises.
True.
just saying. Yeah, no, I do want to point out that like fMRI scans prove that trans people exist. So get fucked with your research, lady. Like, no, you don't get to just pick and choose like this.
Yeah.
That's what I wrote. When it says, crucially, however, what is a blessing in one place is a curse in another. And I wrote, like penises, ?
True.
Because this doesn't talk about rape at all. And like, he really should. If he's talking about men needing to accumulate more power, he should really be talking about the abuses of the power that happen. Because like, if you don't talk about the safety features and people don't use the safety features, and like, people get hurt. This is just like a thing we know. I thought that was really, really strange.
More women in leadership, we might not have the problems we have.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. You know, he, like, the argument essentially is just one of power, right? Like, we have a right to power because God and because penises, and you have to be okay with that. And so to me, if somebody is advocating for the accumulation of power or saying, I have a right to power because of whatever, you know, the divine right of kings or whatever the fuck you're mm-hmm. talking about.
The divine right of depending dicks on the is century. What it comes down to.
The divine right of dicks. I love this. Yeah, that if you're talking about power and you're not talking about responsibly using your power, then you're just talking about, like, you're giving yourself more potential to abuse people. You are saying, I don't need any accountability. I don't have to be responsible for any of this. Like, he doesn't look at all. He doesn't examine in any way, shape, or form the harms that come from men having, like, this unmitigated power. It's mm-hmm. just like, we have to have it because God, that's at the end. So to me, like, if, like, any tool that you were trying to accumulate and you were not even willing to acknowledge that all tools need to have safety features, like, period. You cannot, mm-hmm. Because all tools can be abused. All tools can cause harm, right? There is not a tool mm-hmm. that you cannot use to hurt someone if that's what you decided to do. Power is, like, at the very top of that list. So to not even have any boundaries around, like, where does the power stop? Mm-hmm. You know?
And okay. I'll mention this, and I think we should punt to a break, but it's like the article is framed, like the picture that they use with the article is a picture of a statue of Perseus beheading Medusa. So it's like already it kind of sets you up a little bit with violent imagery. Like, mm-hmm. and people pointed out online that, like, Medusa famously in mythology was a rape victim, like mm-hmm. that was punished for being an ungrateful rape victim or being raped in the wrong place. So, you know, so it's like,
yeah, again, it's like, if you think that you deserve to have power, where are the safety features? Like, what are you talking about to make sure that you aren't causing harm? Mm-hmm. Right. And that just
they've doubled down on the whole, like, we will destroy feminism, we will eradicate it, we will behead feminism. Like,
you can't kill an idea, bro. I was like, I'm not going to waste my time texting. I don't have his fucking number. I'm not going to waste my time tweeting William Wolf. But I was like, people have tried to kill ideas for a long time, my man. Mm-hmm. Good
you
luck.
Keep trying, you know, but it's
I guess
this casual use of violent imagery, like, because I don't know, because it makes you feel good. I don't know. So
yeah,
we will continue down this weird rabbit hole of why Christian men hate women. But I don't know that we're going to come to a conclusion per se, but I think it's an interesting thing to analyze, and also just kind of even to analyze in myself, like, times where I was like, oh shit, I was an evangelical man. But mm-hmm. so we're going to take a quick capitalism break, and then we'll get back and we'll do, we'll talk about this some more. So we'll be back.
Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for hanging in with the little capitalism break that we are taking. If you would like to skip the ads, you are more than welcome to do that. Just go to patreon.com/gohomebible and sign up at any tiers, and you will get the episode a little bit early. Sometimes, most of the time, depends on what we're going through that week. And also, no ads. So you don't have to listen to people speak to you in Spanish about, you know, Maybelline or Ford trucks or what. All of my ads are in Spanish now, which I actually love. So patreon.com/gohomebible. You can also, whether you can do that or not, if you would be so kind as to leave a 5-star review with a nice written word or two, that also makes a big difference, because the algorithm loves words and stars. And so if we have words and stars, the algorithm loves the show, which is wonderful.
Yeah. We need,
although I do have to say,
algorithm to smile upon us,
to love us. Scott told me when he's in town a couple of weeks ago, he was like, Go Home Bible is my favorite show, and I was just like, okay, I'm doing the whole show for Scott now.
Yes, for Scott.
Yeah, I'm like, this is, I'm like, I feel really good about this. So thanks, Scott, for saying that. You are a wonderful human, and I'm excited to see you in a couple of weeks for Content Warning, which is our fun event that is happening in Portland coming up very soon, President's Day weekend, February 17th and 18th. We are going to be getting together, talking about what it looks like to move forward from purity culture. I think a lot of us have spent time in the deconstruction space, kind of really grieving and doing a lot of self-discovery. And so we wanted to create a space to ask questions about, like, what does it look like to move on from here? What does it look like to thrive? What does it look like to advocate for consent, right? In a culture that is really not into that. So we would love for you to join us doing it here in Portland, Oregon. You can also join us online if you are so inclined. There are still tickets available. You can go to contentwarningevent.com if you would like to check those out. Or if you need, shoot us an email. I will remind Justin to check our email box, and sometimes it doesn't always happen. This is not hating on Justin at all. This is, we don't get that many emails, so there's not really a reason to check it that often.
Who enjoys if you email? Want to
email us. That's true, although we do from time to time get really kind messages from people.
We do, so. Very much so, and we appreciate them.
Yes. Once so every 6 months. If you want to email us. Yes. Yeah. gohomebible@gmail.com. Super simple. All of the things are just Go Home Bible, you guys. It's the Patreon. It's the email address. It's our Instagram. It's our Twitter. All the things. So very easy. We're very easy to find. Did I do all of the things?
You did.
I think I did amazing. All the things.
If you're wherever you're at, clap.
Thank you.
It was great. Now I feel like I want to say more only because I don't want to dive back into this fucking article. And
but you want to do banter so that you can avoid the article?
I kind of do. And we banter.
Oh, you know, we're getting through it. We're getting through
it. We are. We're getting through it. So here's where it gets interesting, I think, he's made this case. He's propped up his buddy, whatever, Father Robinson, whatever. And he's, you know, summoned C.S. Lewis to the chat now. And also in science, too, apparently.
Some science. Some... It's the whites only entrance for science that he has summoned. Yes.
The whites only science. God damn.
Oh man, it's just called phrenology, you guys. You don't have to use the long name. You don't have to use its government name. You can just call it phrenology.
So now he's going to actually use his biblical arguments to, you know, to really bring it home. And it's an interesting way that he goes about it. Number one, I will say Jesus is not mentioned a single fucking time in this article. Not at all. Not even alluded to. Like, not at all. Because, I mean, honestly, to most evangelical manosphere, evangelical men, Jesus is too much of a pussy. Like, I'm just, they wouldn't say that, but they think it. So that's what it comes down to. So, because Jesus had empathy for oppressed groups of people. But
women.
And women, too. Like, Jesus was not a breadwinner. He was funded by women.
The so-called bread. Oh my gosh, the so-called oppressed groups like women. Jesus had empathy for, but he doesn't care. Joe doesn't care about that shit.
No, he doesn't. I mean, and so he's basically is like, you know, women, people with empathy, but I don't know, are, you know, they will entice you to be empathetic towards them, to treat them with kindness or whatever. And we shouldn't do that because the God says in Deuteronomy that you shall not yield to them. You shall not listen. You shall not pity them. You shall not spare them. You know, like, it's probably completely out of context. I haven't looked up the context of Deuteronomy here, but it's like, you know, so for people that commit murder and, you know, lie in court, you know, in such cases, you shall not pity them. So like, okay, so in this random verse in Deuteronomy, God says, don't pity people. Therefore, men should lead because men don't pity people. I don't, like, make it make sense. It's shitty exegesis. Like, even for an evangelical, this is a shitty biblical argument. Like, it's not good. Like, I'll just say it, Joe, you suck as a biblical theologian. Like, you're bad at this. You should stop. So anyway, I'll continue because it's like, again, I'm not like a Bible believing Christian anymore, but I do have a respect for this book, and at least in the sense of the power that it has over our culture and our society and the world that we live in. So like, fucking use it right. Like, please, like, or at least respectfully, like, I don't know, like, use it at least in the way that most people agree exegesis should be done, not just like, well, it says don't pity, and the opposite of empathy is not pitying someone. So God wants men in charge. Like, you're dumb. You're stupid. And I'm only engaging with this because so many people were like, yeah, this is amazing. Highly relevant for leadership and governance in the church. You know, this, you know, empathy and pity are a liability, not an asset, according to God. And that one stupid verse that he probably doesn't even understand the context of. And then he talks about Moses coming down from the mountain and, you know, like, you know, being pissed at people. And, you know, so anyway, whatever. So in other words, be mad for Jesus. No, that's not what he says. Scripture can teach both by precept. And anyway, I'm not even going to get into this. Just basically, like, that is the empathetic sex. That's what he says. He refers to women as the empathetic sex, is ill-suited to the ministerial office. And thus women's ordination is indeed a watershed issue. Like, all this is just to say women shouldn't be able to preach and teach, which is you're not even making good. He can't use Jesus, honestly, or much of the New Testament, because Jesus, like, kind of famously palled around with women, and Paul, for all his faults, kind of famously referred to women as apostles. So they can't really use the New Testament for any of their shit. They have to, like, use these vague, not good references to, like, prop up their misogyny.
Legal proceedings in court.
Yeah.
That don't apply.
Your misogyny is so bad, the Bible doesn't even back you up. Like, that's that's bad. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is literally, I was like, this is a conclusion in search of evidence. Like, that's all we're doing here right now.
Yeah.
God, I know. I had so many thoughts about that part, and I was just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just gonna, like, try to get through this, because I'm like, you're applying this wrong, right? He's going and saying, talking about the Moses thing, when Moses comes down from the mountain and says to the Israelites, like, who's on the Lord's side? Come to me. And then the sons of Levi went to Moses, and Moses tells them, go kill everybody. They don't kill everybody, by the way. But they do go to and fro through the camp, killing their brothers, companions, and neighbors. They were not supposed to pity those who had committed evil, which, worshiping a gold cow that could not have possibly looked like a cow, because they were in the middle of the fucking desert.
Yeah, and also, to be clear, they were worshiping God, like Yahweh God. They just made a calf to help them do it. Like, that's...
Yes. Thank you for saying that.
An important thing to remember.
Yeah, no, monotheism was not a thing for these people. That wasn't a concept. They didn't.
No.
That was not a construct that existed. So, yeah. Thank you, Justin, for making that really great historical point that I forgot to make. but yeah, somehow the Levites going around and killing people means that men are in charge.
That feels like an overreaction to me.
It does. Women never kill anybody, so women can't be in charge.
No.
Again, like, this logic. What is with this logic, man? yeah, but he's just, like, doing all of these random... He's doing all of this shit about, like, pulling stuff out of Deuteronomy and Numbers to, like, back up... That have nothing to do with whatever biblical manhood or whatever language they're using right now. Like, doesn't have anything to do with that. You're again, like, kind of grasping at straws here. Something that I thought was really interesting, you know, like, he says that the urge to, like, act in preservation of women is a good thing. He says the masculine impulse to protect women is good and noble. Men are taught from a young age, don't hit girls, treat them differently than the boys. This is, again, really interesting, because this is the same kinds of people who are cheering this on are also saying that, like, marital rape doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So don't hit girls, but you can fuck them whenever you feel like it, because God. Okay, what? No? So then he's like basically implying that women are entering into the boxing ring by participating in society, I guess. And so men don't want to beat them up when they participate in society because it's not fair to them. And so then women just get to come and like walk all over everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And he quotes Lewis again for some fucking reason, who says, "Battles are ugly when women fight." To which Bro adds, "This is true, not merely a physical war." What the fuck are you talking about, my dude? But also of ideological and theological battles.
Well, Tori, I don't know so if you knew this, but when here? But when men engage in like hand-to-hand combat and war, it's typically like a pretty like calm affair, very reasoned, very dispassionate. It's
beautiful.
Beautiful even, mm-hmm. Yes. But when yeah. women fight, ugh, it's just ugly. Yeah,
because they're doing it with their emotions. Men don't have those.
Yeah, like and again, it's this weird like because yeah, he talks about almost like good men will be deceived by women in their desire to help them. So like you know he talks
not
like,
get hit.
Yeah, not get hit. So like. So even if a woman is wrong, a man will leap to her defense, you know, and be deceived. It's just, again, it's like this whole, like, women are objects or foils for men. Like, men are the actors in the world and women mm-hmm. are the objects. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. that is throughout this whole damn thing. Like, you know, and men are helpless. You know, but they're also
then
great
why are
leaders.
You writing this?
Like, yeah, like that's, you know, and again, I just want to go back to his biblical metaphors. Like, all of them are men getting super emotional and killing people. Like, that's, like, again, that's his,
welp,
that's his big
go-to,
like, ideological, biblical precedent is like, these men went out and killed people. Therefore, you know, like that makes
women
them
aren't
good,
people.
You know, like, and they also killed women.
Therefore,
like,
women can't lead.
Women can't lead because when men get emotional, they kill people. I don't know. It makes sense. And it's just so awful that this Robinson guy got disinvited from conferences for making this terrible argument. So I'm going to make these arguments on the internet.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where it's like they say intentionally inflammatory stuff, like they want to get a rise out of people. Then they're like, oh, my God, can you believe how these people reacted? Like, calm the fuck down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, but that's you wanted a reaction. You wouldn't have used that language if you didn't want a reaction. God. Something that was really interesting. Again, he like falls back on these tropes about like male groups operate according to male norms. That is not a static thing, my friend. You are deceived. I don't know what. Read a book.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to a podcast. I don't know what to tell you. Male norms, not a static thing. Just not. Sorry.
Like, male norms have changed in the 40 years I've been alive. Like,
yes.
Like, they haven't been.
Drastically in the last 80 years.
Yes.
Totally. Like,
and
very like, drastically in the last 80 years.
Like during the, let me just, I'm sorry. During the Victorian era,
do it.
Men were the ones perceived to be as not sexual and not wanting sex. And women were the ones that were like the wanton sex pots that will just like drop their panties at like the sight of a man's ankle or something, you know, like it was like, that's how it was viewed. And then now it's like, oh no, it's men that can't control mm-hmm. themselves. You know, it's like that, like even mm-hmm. just the views of what our sexuality is and how we express it has changed in the last 100 years. Like that's,
yeah,
that's just the way it works.
Completely reversed.
Yeah.
In the like, last 100 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm, boy. Oh boy.
So like
God
to tell me that these things are static is like you like maybe they are in your very tiny subculture of this very tiny subculture of, you know, like, I don't know. And also, like, the whole, like, willing to debate, challenge, and provoke one another directly and comfortable with hierarchy. I'm sorry, I'm a man, and I will fight you over hierarchy for sure. Like, I'm not comfortable with hierarchy. Like, you're like, what are you describing?
Oh, I'm comfortable with it because I'm on top.
Yeah, like, come on. Like, dude, he's using these weird, like, alpha wolf things, you know, which was only, like, a thing that was discovered, quote unquote, in like wolves of separate packs in like captivity, like would fight each other for dominance. Yeah. Like, not in nature. That's not mm-hmm. how that there aren't alpha male isn't a thing.
I have major thoughts about this next sentence though, Justin.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, because he's like male groups. He says male groups are willing to debate, challenge, and provoke one another directly and are comfortable with hierarchy. Sorry, if you're at the top of the hierarchy, I don't give a fuck if you're comfortable or not. Mm-hmm. But then he goes, female groups of what? Penguins? The dogs? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you talking about? Be specific. Mm-hmm. Female groups operate according to female norms, again, as Justin just pointed out, which have completely reversed in the last, like, 120 years. So, no, mm-hmm. But whatever. Female groups are oriented, operate according to female norms, oriented to people or feelings. And then he says, prone to indirect and subtle communication and sublimated conflict.
Nope.
And averse to open disagreement and overt hierarchies, but comfortable with excluding those who violate their social norms. Okay, so I don't know if you know this, Joe, but your grandpa hit your grandma, which is why she didn't say things directly and tried to be fucking subtle.
Mm-hmm.
Because women get murdered every day in this country by their husbands and their boyfriends and their partners. And millions of women are stuck in situations that they cannot leave because they don't have the means to do so. So, yeah, sorry. Since, again, you're not talking about, like, domestic violence, which the accumulation, the unchecked accumulation of male power, hello, like, domestic violence is just the result of that, right? Like, you don't mention sexual assault, even though men do 99.999% of that. And
typically in male, like, groups. So put that in your hat and
yeah,
smoke it.
Yeah. Like, unfortunately, yes. Things aren't looking great for you, my guy. This is really interesting, right? Because he admits that it's a generalization.
Mm-hmm.
But then he goes, for our purposes, it's important to note that mixed groups, again, penguins, what are we talking about, will inevitably tend to adopt female norms. Not a thing. Female norms are not
female norms aren't a thing. And I've been in plenty of groups of men and women where, like, people, what did he say? Debate, challenge, and provoke each other directly. And, like, that's, yes. And I've been in mixed groups where people were pretty fucking indirect. Like,
Yeah. So he's talking about Western female norms in the last, like, 75 years ish. Like, that's mm-hmm. what he's referring to, which in the grand scheme of things doesn't fucking register. Like, again, if this were some universal thing, then it would look the same for people of other cultures, and it doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the places that it looks the most the same are places that experienced colonization, where you told people, behave like men or women, or we murder you or cut your hands off or whatever. So that's not really a choice, but it's also not really, like, human nature, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's not that, because, like, if it were natural, people would just do it and you wouldn't have to murder them for not mm-hmm. being man the right way.
Yeah. Anyway. And here's the wild thing, I don't want to park on this for too long, but it's like, he says, the unsurprising result, often unexpressed in public, but noted in private among men, is a frustration at the unfairness of the asymmetry of the mixed group. I'm sorry, but it is plenty expressed in public how unfair it is that we just can't hit women. Like, you know, like, that's like... I'm sorry, uh-huh. like, you know, oh, we just can't speak our minds anymore. We can't just, like, I'm just asking questions. Like, I'm sorry, mm-hmm. you all whine on the internet constantly, about like how empathy just is awful. So whatever, but, you know, and then he kind of moves on. I'm just gonna move on, like, because it's, he talks about like basically like how like now we have to identify this battle in our, you know, context, and how the Southern Baptist Convention is fighting for female pastors and, you know, all this other things, and how it's just, you know, it's just, they're everywhere, the women wanting to preach everywhere. And I don't know how we need to, I don't know.
This is really interesting again, because like the amount of sexual abuse that takes place in churches that only allow men to be in leadership.
Mm-hmm.
That's some interesting data he might mm-hmm. want to look at. You know, just a thought, but it's a natural, like, sexual abuse is a natural part of that kind of hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so again, he doesn't fucking mention it.
Yeah. And honestly, like, that statement that you made has way more research to back it up than
than anything he said.
Anything he has said so far. Like, and that's the frustrating thing about trying to even engage with folks is, like, the facts do not matter. Like, it's mm-hmm. all vibes. The mm-hmm. the Bible doesn't matter. It's all vibes. The, like, history doesn't matter. Like, your favorite theologian doesn't matter. Like, it's entirely based on vibes and memes and, like, just my confident feelings. Like, he says yes. This, like, you know, that's where I'm like, this is just dumb. Like, he just vomits all over the page. And this kind of shit's going on in local churches all the time, where it's just word vomit of the guy's feelings mm-hmm. who claims he doesn't feel. Mm-hmm. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. Like, the most dangerous person in the room is the person that says they're unemotional. Like, mm-hmm. because that just means they do not feel, or they are not aware of their emotions.
They're not, like, capable of recognizing their emotions. Which
they are definitely
terrifying.
Being driven and controlled by those emotions entirely, mm-hmm. but they are unaware. And that to me is where it's like, and that's honestly a tragedy of being a man. I think in a Western context, mm-hmm. it's like, it's not that we don't have emotions.
Yeah.
We just are
to use them.
We're never taught to allow them to guide us. We're never. And so, like, all we feel is anger. But it's like there's so many other emotions that are under the surface. Like, the only one we're allowed to feel the only one we're permitted to perceive is anger.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like the other ones aren't there. So whatever bullshit this guy is, go to therapy, my man. Like, or if you can't afford therapy, like, I don't know, just stop. Just sit, I don't know, with your thoughts, like, touch grass, like, actually observe nature. You'll probably see a lot of things that really blow your mind.
Justin, come on now. Nature and scripture speak with one voice. He says so right in this piece.
Respectfully. either the earth is a globe or it's a disc that sits at God's feet. Which one is it?
It's both at the same time. It's mm-hmm. the Trinitarian theory of earth shape.
Yeah.
Or it's both. It's like flat and round at the same time.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. The earth is also a trinity. It's like the states of matter.
Of shapes.
Yes.
Oh, God. This is, yeah.
So no, in a way of speaking, we're both right, but I'm more right because I'm a man.
Oh, God, I fucking love this. I can't, like, nature and scripture speak with one voice. Like, no, the Bible says that insects have four legs and, like, lungfish exist, in case you were wondering about evolution. And, lots of animals have sex with themselves because there are no sexes in that particular species. Everybody mm-hmm. comes with both parts. I don't know. Is this what nature is telling me and scripture is wrong, or scripture just, you know, 3,000 years old and they just didn't know some shit? And that's actually fine if you're not going to worship the fucking book, but
yeah. And Jurassic Park caught me that some frogs are trans. So like
it's because they're drinking the water, man.
Yeah. So, so yeah, it gets even more nonsensical because he talks about the, you know, basically like egalitarianism being terrible. and how it's the path to liberalism. This is his slippery slope.
Is a good one.
The slippery slope of feminism is a one-way train with four stops, often represented by the four books that someone on the train could write. Stop number one. I'm not that kind of complementarian. Complementarian, meaning, for those that maybe not know, is basically what this guy is, which is that the sexes are meant to complement each other. So women are meant to serve, men are meant to lead, and that complements. So bullshit, but anyway. So stop number one, I'm not that kind of complementarian. Stop number two, I'm neither complementarian nor egalitarian. Egalitarian being you could just be whatever the fuck you want, regardless of your parts. And then stop number three, I am egalitarian. And then stop number four, sodomy is cool. Okay, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't understand this slippery slope at all. the logic didn't follow at all. So anyway.
Oh man, I think it's because you're deceived.
Yeah, right? It's because I'm like deceived.
This is kind of fun. I mean, yeah, like sodomy is cool, actually, but not that you'll ever know. That was to Joe, not to Justin. For anyone listening, he was confused.
Perhaps one day I'll know.
I just rolled my eyes honestly when I got to this part, because I was like, okay, it was like, for me at least, it was like the official, like, you're just listening to yourself talk, man. Mm-hmm. Like, that is all that is happening here. You like the sound of your own voice a lot, more than God, I think. And it's really interesting, right? Because he calls this slippery slope a cancer, which I guess that's how cancer is a slippery slope, right?
Yeah. He likes cancer. He enjoys cancer as a metaphor.
He does.
Like,
he also likes dick. He just doesn't know it. And this is not me saying, oh, you're a homophobe, so you're also like secretly gay. That's not what I'm saying. I'm like, mm-hmm. He's very repressed and didn't have any experiences as a younger person.
He's mad
about it and has to write angry screeds on the internet about how nobody can have conversations anymore. You know, there are Nazis on the street corner, but you can't talk about stuff with men anymore because people with lady parts might be in the room and they're not required to disclose that to you before they're within 100 feet of you or a school. So it's very strange. But the things that I think that like the things that we hate are obviously like tell us a lot about who we are as people. That's what I will say. And I think that he doesn't use any kind of like a consistent framework. I mean, we talked about this when we recorded with Megan, that like the Bible is not a good basis for a sexual ethic. It's not a consistent basis for a sexual ethic. That's why it's not good. It is a library. It is a collection of books. But yeah, like he is going through, like, because Justin, like you and I go through this stuff and we start clicking through like all of the questions that we ask when somebody makes a statement. We, you know, and I think probably all neurodivergent people go like, are you sure about that? Right. And you have like a list of things that you kind of go through. Right. And so like, as I'm reading this, I'm going through my, like, does this agree with the Bible more broadly than just like the couple of verses you cherry picked? Not really. Like you said, he's doing pretty terrible theology here. Does this agree with science? Like, he cites some research. The one piece of research that he cites from a woman is the only one that I think is right. It actually has like science behind it. But, you know, again, it's still cherry picked because you're not really telling the whole story about like the dynamics, like the power dynamics. Like, power dynamics is another lens that I use. Like, I use the lens of history and not just like the past 75 years of like ahistorical like nonsense that they're preaching. Oh my God. Just preaching in Florida, teaching in Florida schools, not preaching in Florida schools. Yeah. And like, Same. But also, like, again, and we talked about this, but like using a Jesus lens, does what this man is saying agree with Jesus? Like, I'm a fucking atheist and I still use a Jesus lens. Like, I just do. I don't have like, I don't know. I don't have like a Muhammad lens to use. My I don't know, Abraham Moses lens is anti-Semitic, so I'm trying to get rid of it because I was raised in that garbage and shouldn't be using anti-Semitic lenses, you know?
And my Buddhist lens is kind of appropriative, so like I try not to use that one.
Like my Native American lens.
Yeah. Like
but again,
my Greek
like, that's
mythology
something
lens says this is crap. Also,
yeah, Greek and how often do you think about ancient Rome, Justin?
Not as often as I think about ancient Greece, but anyway.
Fair. But no, something that I mentioned to Justin before we started recording, when I was talking about all of these things that I kind of click through and like when I'm asking myself these questions, like, does this line up with history? Would this make sense? Would he agree with these statements if they were coming from, say, a black man who was anti-white? Like this guy is saying that like race is woke, which means it's sinful. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So would he agree with a black man saying this, that like white men are all reactionaries and they're just trying to silence everybody and they need to be put in their place by God? Like he wouldn't agree with that. Right. But, you know, we always talk about like impact is more important than like whatever your good intentions may have been. But an impact lens of like, does this cause harm or not? If you're talking to a Christian, I realized right before we started recording, you can just ask them like, is the evidence that comes from this hierarchy that he's so adamant about, like the fruit of the spirit? Like, is that the result of this thing that you're doing? Cause like, if it is for you, like that's fine, but you don't get to tell me that it is for me. Like, you don't get to tell me that I'm experiencing peace and joy with you on top of me and like having no regard for my humanity whatsoever. Like if you and your wife, whatever, that's fine. Like I'm fine with that if that brings you joy. Like if you like your boring missionary sex once every 6 weeks, like go with God. Don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about the actual impact of these kinds of hierarchies, like I said, they create safe spaces for sexual assault. So if you're not even willing to acknowledge that, then like you shouldn't have power over people. You're not part of the hierarchy. You go on the bottom now.
Yeah. You go into hierarchy jail. Like you're done.
Yeah.
Like
hierarchy and, basement.
Yeah. So you go to the bottom. And again, like if we're going to use like the functional result of what he's kind of advocating for is violence. Like mm-hmm. his biblical metaphors are all violent. All of his metaphors involve some kind of violence, removing disease. Like it's this very like dehumanizing language. And again, like the reason I think we wanted to focus on this article one is I think it kind of paints this broader picture of how Christian men are socialized to view women and to view women's mm-hmm. power and to view women's autonomy. Like, and to casually treat women as property or as objects, like mm-hmm. even if they're like, they will look at our culture and be like, oh, look at porn. It objectifies women. But it's like, y'all objectify women way more. In subtle ways and in overt ways. And he like kind of goes on here to talk about his type of complementarianism being what he calls natural complementarianism, which is like, essentially, like it is self-evident from the Bible and it is self-evident from nature that male headship is, you know, he says male headship in the home is unavoidable. It's not a command, but baseline reality. Like, and it's like, again, you don't get to just define reality based on what you want reality to be. Sadly, this isn't the Matrix. Like, you don't just get to like... believe.
Amazing. Oh, the vibes.
Yeah. So
no,
like
it's not like, yeah, like you said, it's not reality and you don't get to decide what reality is. Mm-hmm. And you're actually like announcing your lack of just, I don't know, like knowledge about the world, I guess, refusal to read a book when you're talking this way. You know, there's like male headship is obvious. Like, again, like the nuclear family is a brand new social construct, like brand new.
And it's not a great
one. And it's not great, but it wouldn't. Here's the thing is that like it wouldn't the nuclear family wouldn't be possible without capitalism I don't know. I would have to do a little more research to find out about like social, like to actually look at communism and figure out if that would be something that was more sustainable in terms of like nuclear family versus not. But yeah, the nuclear family as it exists right now wouldn't be possible without capitalism, and capitalism is not possible without exploitation. Or maybe it is, but that's never happened. So again, like if we're just talking about nature and data, there's never been capitalism without exploitation. But that's the only way for like a nuclear family, like, hey, headship, I'm in charge. I don't have to answer to anybody but God. Like that's not real life. Humans didn't evolve that way. That wouldn't have been possible for people like during Jesus's time. Like people were very communal. They had to depend on each other because there were no social safety nets, right? If there was no fish, you just didn't eat. Mm-hmm. That's all there was, right? So interdependence was essential for survival. So just like the very fact that you're making, like putting these words together and announcing to the world that, you know, again, you don't read, that your like analysis is very poor, you don't employ a lot of like critical thinking skills in terms of asking yourself, does this apply in every area? What places can I look for? Or not that. What he's failing to do is he's failing to acknowledge the places where what he is saying actually doesn't add up. He's just ignoring mm-hmm. that. That's what I mean by critical thinking. Because I think critical thinking is blech, but it's weaponized. That's what I mean to say. But he's refusing to look at the places that disagree with what he's saying and come to terms with those.
Yeah, he just like putting his fingers in his ears and closing his eyes and being like, la, 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 like this, you know, like if reality says men are heads. Like, it's like,
that's reality says men are heads, women are tails.
Yeah, that's
okay.
What he's doing. Like, and like, because God says so, you know, like, I mean, there is a passing reference to Christ, I should say, but And again, like, I'll just say, like, I'll call myself an outlier even. Like, I've never wanted a, like trad wife content. Maybe it's your thing, dear listener. It's not for me. I don't want a servant. I'm not into that. Like, I'm not, like, no thank you. Please, have opinions. Please. You know, like that's never been my thing. Like, to, like... You know, if I wanted to have a relationship with an object, I could find one. Like, but that's not what I'm into. Like,
so it's like dolls for that.
Yeah, they make dolls for that. Like, so it's just not if that's what I wanted. Like, there's AI girlfriends now. Like, so I don't like. There's like, no, I'm just not into that. Just personally, so it's like, are you saying I don't align with reality because just the tastes I was born with, like. I'm not real. Like I'm deceived. Like in what ways? Like
you're not a real man.
Yeah. I'm not a real man. Cause I don't want to help meet like whatever, you know, I would probably even say I know hundreds of men that feel the same way. I know hundreds of women that don't fit these molds, or they were forced into these molds for a time in their life. Mm-hmm. And then they realized I don't have to do this anymore. Like, mm-hmm. And so it's again, like you're the reality that these people are saying is objective is one that they are imposing on what actual reality is, which mm-hmm. is far more complex and far more beautiful and far, far more scary and far more difficult to deal with. And so they just choose to not. And yeah. and that's where it's like, come on, like, I can't even take you seriously. I have to take you seriously because so many other people do. And these are ideas we have to wrestle with and contend with and call out, sadly. But it's just vibes. It's just not, there's when you actually dig into it, it's just smoke and mirrors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So good times. Think we should send this guy to the basement.
Yeah. He
time out for Joe.
And yeah. Joe. Yeah. Oh, and to be clear, this is his title. He is a fellow of theology. Oh, wow. That sounds quite prestigious. At New St. Andrew's College. Oh, that sounds prestigious. In Moscow, Idaho.
That's the thing that, that Doug Wilson just pulled out of his ass.
Yeah. Yep.
Great.
So there we go. There it is. A lot of titles.
So he gets paid to write this.
Pulled out of his ass. So
for like a made up college.
For a made up college with a made up title. A made up person, really. Like Joseph, this persona is made up. Like, I look forward to meeting the real you someday.
We've decided.
This is not it.
You are not real.
Yeah. The baseline self-evident reality is that you are AI at best. Which.
Incredible.
There we go. So thanks, folks, for listening in. I thought about casting, Joe. But we're not going to do that.
Oh, okay.
casting okay. this fake there person. We go. But no, we're not going to do that. Thank you so much. And I guess if anything, like, this shit is stuff we have to deal with, but also like it's pretty easy to poke holes in, and like it thrives on the internet and it thrives in Moscow, Idaho, but it doesn't need to thrive in your home or in your heart because it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
go with God or whatever thing you wish to go with, and enjoy your life, and we'll see you next week.